headlines, violence gripping Lebanon's capital, multiple casualties at a protest against a probe into last year's Beirut blast. We have the details for you just ahead. Bulldozing Palestinian property. Israeli forces destroy dozens of structures north of the occupied city of Al-Quds. Japan dissolves its parliament, setting the stage for an early election at the end of the month. Hello and welcome, everybody, here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is the World News. Our top story for this half hour, we begin with the Lebanese capital, where protests against a judge investigating last year's deadly Beirut port blast has turned deadly. So far, at least 6 people are confirmed dead and 60 others wounded. Heavy gunfire and blasts have been heard. There have also been reports of a sniper fire at people. Army troops have moved to clear the protest site. The protesters are outraged at what they see as Washington's interference in the investigation. They say the judge overseeing the case is being swayed by the United States. The resistance movement, Hezbollah, is critical of the U.S. interference. The movement is calling on the army to intervene and stop armed groups from shooting at the protesters. Hezbollah has accused gunmen from the Christian Lebanese Forces Party of being behind the attacks on civilians. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Najib Mikati has called for immediate arrest of those responsible for the violence. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh is joining us now from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Mariam, please bring us up to speed on the latest developments that are taking place there.
Well, at least we know that now there is some sort of calm. We know that the Lebanese army has moved in to the area where there was sniper fire and heavy artillery found in the buildings and on top of the buildings as well. They continue to deploy in this area. Maybe we can give you a closer shot at what is happening over here inside. That is the main area that basically separates the South Beirut, which is a stronghold of the Amal movement and is also a place where you have supporters of the resistance. And on the left side, you have the supporters of the Christian Party, the Lebanese Forces Group. And that is something that was reminiscent of the civil war back where the fighting was mainly between Christian groups and Muslim groups. At that time, it was not Hezbollah that was part of this fighting, but the Lebanese forces were the main side that was leading that civil war. And it seems that this is what we're seeing right now, coming back to bring that fighting to Lebanon, to Beirut Street. However, with the fact that we have self-restraint from the side of Hezbollah supporters and the Amal movement supporters who were targeted today as peaceful protesters, that self-restraint led to the fact that the firing was only from one side. We saw how some of the buildings were destroyed, their window panes were shattered, and that was all the result, basically, of the sniper fire. When the Lebanese army tried to enter the area and stop the snipers, they were also shot at, and that was something that we saw clearly, and we heard from the Prime Minister and the Interior Minister when they also went to the control room of the army and learned about the details that had happened. It was around, like we said, 10:45 this morning in this very area where protesters were gathering in order to march towards the Judicial Palace, which is several meters away, in order to protest peacefully the probe into the Beirut port explosion, which they say is very unfair, it is selective, it is politicized, and that was when they were shot at by snipers. That was unprecedented. Although we heard a lot of opposition from some political groups against this gathering, still we have not seen sniper fire for quite a while here in Lebanon, unless there was always this political turbulence, and there was even security turbulence, but that has not been the case in the last 2 years. The last 2 years, we've seen many protests, as we heard from the interior minister, there were many protests, but we never saw sniper fire. That is something that is unacceptable. If we hear from the interior minister, who has control over the army and the security apparatus, therefore he has the power to ask for the army and the security apparatus to go into the area where they saw the sniper fire, to stop the armed men, to stop those who are holding illegitimate arms, in order to make sure that peace is back. Now, this calm is hopefully something that we will continue to see. However, the army has asked us to take measures just in case we do see some other attempts of violent disturbance here in this area specifically. Now, we have a new statement by Hezbollah's and the Amal movement, who are, of course, the main sides that were targeted by this. It was their protesters. It was the protesters of the Hezbollah movement and the Amal movement who peacefully came to protest against the current prosecutor judge in the probe of the Beirut Blast, who is Tariq Al-Bitar. And they said very clearly that in light of the fact that we were in a protest to express in a civilized manner a political position, which is clear, it is a political position that we have as two political groups expressed in all gatherings, and that we have a protest against the policies of the investigation into the crime of the Beirut port blast. And then it was only a symbolic gathering. It was not even, they said, a gathering that was very much a crowded gathering. It was only tens of people who wanted to come and protest peacefully facing the judicial court. And then they said that this was when the protesters were assaulted by a clear assault of gunmen, armed groups, from the Lebanese Forces Party. That is the first time that we hear Hezbollah and the Amal movement naming who they believe is the side behind that crime of shooting against the violent protesters. And they said that this is a very clear crime from those groups of the Lebanese forces from the rooftops, and they had continued to kill. It was clear preemptive murder, as they called it, and there are several martyrs and tens of wounded. Now, they say that Hezbollah and the Amal movement denounce this act, this criminal act, which they say only leads to sow discord, to sow sedition among the Lebanese, and to sow a certain violence among the Lebanese people.
All right, thanks a lot. Mariam Saleh joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Staying on the topic, author and researcher Ali Hamia says the current instability in Lebanon only works to the advantage of the U.S. and Israel.
We have our enemy at our southern front, and this enemy is supported by United States and some of the inside traitor, as we say. We are resistant in all our means just to keep Lebanon stable and, to defend all our means, by all our means, defending the Lebanese and the territories and the sea borders. But the American conspiracy is not letting us, to do our job. Every time we try to stable our country, we have something coming up by the American. The American and the Israelis are the only side that are benefiting from Lebanon going into sectarian strife or into chaos or violence, whatever, just to not let this government work.
Israel keeps destroying and seizing more Palestinian property in the occupied West Bank. 30 commercial facilities, including a gas station, have now been demolished. The demolitions took place near the Ghalandia checkpoint north of Al-Quds. Israel is planning to build a tunnel linking a highway to one of its settlements in the area. It also wants to build a new settlement there. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. Israel regularly demolishes Palestinian homes, claiming they lack building permits. The UN report says in August alone, nearly 100 Palestinians were displaced when their homes were destroyed in Al-Quds. Commentator Amal Wahdan says the Israeli regime will not stop demolishing Palestinian homes and property unless the international community takes action on the matter.
It seems like they are in a hurry to grab the rest of what's left from East, from occupied Jerusalem, to declare a de facto capital for their claimed Jewish state. So with giving with a variety of false pretexts on the demolishing of these homes and houses and workshops and agricultural facilities, it's not actually it's not actually going to stop unless there is an action be done to confront it. That demolishing of the houses, they want to clear more and more space for their settlements. Now they are thinking of separating Beit Lahem from Jerusalem, from occupied Jerusalem, by another settlement in the in between. Actually, the assaults that is happening and continue to happen in Sheikh Jarrah, Silwan, and the registration and settlements of properties and land in occupied Jerusalem is another actually crime.
The Palestine's Al-Quds Brigades, that's the armed wing of the Islamic Jihad movement, says it's on alert and fully ready to defend Palestinians locked up in Israeli jails. The brigade has even declared a state of mobilization. The movement says it will not shy away from going to war with the Israeli regime to defend the prisoners. Hamas official Zahir Jabarin also says prisoners from all factions and resistance groups are ready to join any coordinated measures. Israel has been treating inmates harshly since last month. When six Palestinians escaped atop a security jail, they were later recaptured. 400 prisoners are now on hunger strike in protest at the tough conditions. Now staying with the occupied West Bank, that is not the only aggression targeting the Palestinian population there. Israeli forces have also fatally shot a young man in the early morning hours. Palestinian media say the incident took place at Qalandia checkpoint in southern Ramallah on Thursday. The victim's identity is not known yet. Regime forces claim they shot the Palestinian driver because he ran over an Israeli soldier. In recent weeks, Israeli forces have killed several Palestinians during raids in a number of West Bank towns. Palestinian resistance groups have joined their voices to condemn Israel's latest deadly aggression against Syria. On Thursday, an Israeli air raid killed one soldier and injured several others in Syria's Homs province. Reacting to the attack, Palestine's Islamic Jihad movement says it will continue to stand by Syria, which is a pillar of Arab resistance against normalization with Israel. Dawood Shahab, the movement spokesman, believes Syria is paying a heavy price for sticking to its national principles. Also, Hazem Qasem, the spokesman for Hamas, says the Israeli regime is acting like a hooligan in the region by bombarding and killing people. He says the Israeli regime must be confronted to stop it from committing further aggression. Other Palestinian groups have also denounced the attack. And Japan is getting ready to hold its snap elections at the end of this month. It's been only days since Fumio Kishida became Japan's new prime minister. He has now dissolved the lower house of parliament in preparation for the vote. The vote will pit Kishida's party, leading in early polls against main opposition, the Constitutional Democratic Party, for voters. The coronavirus pandemic, economy, and employment are the main concerns. Kishida has promised to improve the government's COVID-19 response, promote economic growth, and increase Japan's defense potential. The former administration faced a lot of criticism over its management of the coronavirus crisis and the holding of the Summer Olympics in Tokyo despite the pandemic. The world is experiencing an energy crisis. It's affecting countries from the West all the way to the East, from the UK to China, and especially in Europe. There's a shortage of energy. Storage capacities are running at minimum capacity. But why have energy resources run to such lows? The COVID-19 pandemic is one factor affecting production and the supply chain.
The world is in the midst of a global energy crisis. Prices in Europe, North America, and Asia have spiraled to multi-year highs in recent weeks. Energy demand is rallying as economies ramp up after the end of pandemic lockdowns, and there are dips in supplies from renewable resources. Energy demand is back today as the world economy reopens, but supply simply hasn't kept up. That is why U.S. oil prices have skyrocketed $120 since crashing to negative $40 a barrel back in April 2020. U.S. oil prices finished above $80 a barrel on Monday for the first time in nearly 7 years. High gas prices will only exacerbate elevated inflation and squeeze the budgets of ordinary families.
Well, we got a little bit of a return of demand as the growth comes off the floor during the COVID era here, and we got economies that are trying to recover. So there's a little bit of that going on. But because it's going on, I believe that global speculators are really responsible for the most of the recent surge in global commodities in general, including oil, natural gas, and so forth.
In Britain, a shortage of the truck drivers who move fuel has led to panic buying amid fears of a shortage. After Brexit, many European truck drivers went back to their home countries and never returned. Some in Europe accuse Russia of deliberately restricting gas flows to the continent. But Russian President Vladimir Putin has brushed off allegations that Moscow is using energy as a weapon, saying that Europe's gas shortage is largely caused by systematic flaws in the continent's energy market. European electricity and gas prices have skyrocketed this year as tight gas supplies have collided with strong demand in economies recovering from COVID-19 pandemic. The International Monetary Fund says persistent supply chain disruptions and inflation pressures are constraining the global economic recovery from the pandemic.
I don't think, however, that this is going to continue for very much longer. The global economy is really weaker than some say. And I think when the GDP figures come out soon for the U.S. for the third quarter, fourth quarter, it will be clear that we don't have a runaway recovery. We have a rebound going on, but we don't have a really robust, sustained economic recovery.
During these times when energy resources are running at historic lows, the world can use a boost to its supplies. Two countries that are left out of that equation are Iran and Venezuela. The Venezuelan and Iranian gas sectors can play a significant role in gas exports to Europe and the wider world. Yet U.S. sanctions are preventing these countries from selling their precious commodity.
Iran says it is ready to resolve the global energy crisis, provided that the oppressive U.S. sanctions are lifted. Oil Minister Javad Oji said that Iran has shown several times its goodwill to help stabilize the oil market and resolve the global energy crisis. However, illegal U.S. sanctions have hindered Tehran to reach that goal. He said that Iran has repeatedly declared that it would be able to swiftly increase its crude production to help alleviate the global shortage of fuel.
You know, the problem with natural gas is that the U.S. has imposed sanctions on Europe and others because it wants to export more natural gas. It's got an excess of natural gas, and that means it will dampen prices and profits of natural gas in the U.S. So the U.S. has had a policy since Trump of exporting and putting pressure on other countries to accept U.S. natural gas, even though it's more expensive than, say, Russian natural gas for Europe.
Europe is heavily reliant on energy supplies from Russia. Amid the current energy crisis, Ukraine and other Eastern European countries accuse Moscow of withholding gas supplies to pressure the West. The European Commission has announced a package of measures to alleviate an energy price surge that has sent bills skyrocketing across Europe. The approval of tax cuts and the joint purchase of fuel by EU members were among the proposals put forward. The European Commission has been under pressure to act on the price crunch. The wholesale price of gas has increased by 250% since January, triggering a knock-on spike in costs for consumers and businesses. However, countries like Iran and Venezuela are more than willing and more than able to provide the world with much-needed energy.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The U.S. infrastructure is not built to a standard that protects against the level of flood risk people face today, let alone how those risks will grow over the next 30 years as the climate changes, said one expert. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Kenny Stansil, journalist. This article is published under the heading, A Quarter of All Critical U.S. Infrastructure at Risk from Flooding, a report says. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Underscoring the need to slash greenhouse gas emissions and invest in public goods to better prepare communities across the United States for escalating extreme weather, a new report released recently finds that one quarter of the U.S. critical infrastructure is already susceptible to flooding that renders it inaccessible, with risks projected to increase in the coming decades. Described as the first ever nationwide evaluation of community-level vulnerability to flooding, the report, Infrastructure on the Brink, compiled by the First Street Foundation, a nonprofit research group that specializes in environmental risk assessment, highlights localities where housing, commercial real estate, transportation networks, schools, hospitals, power plants, and other pieces of infrastructure face operational flood risk in 2021. The analysis also explores how spatial patterns of flood risk are expected to change over the next 30 years as the fossil fuel-driven climate emergency exacerbates sea level rise and extreme rainfall events, which pose direct and indirect threats to the safety and well-being of people throughout the U.S. The report states, it is clear now more than ever that the ways and places in which we live are likely to continue to be impacted by our changing environment. One of the most important implications in this development is the vulnerability of the national infrastructure in the U.S. Using a unique national database that contains parcel-level flood risk information combining hazards, exposure, and vulnerability, as well as over 20,000 flood adaptation measures, the report maps Americans' current and future flood risks based on their proximity to coasts and floodplains, plus the estimated impacts of flood-damaged infrastructure at the broader scales of neighborhoods, zip codes, cities, and counties. As the authors note, individuals whose homes were spared the impact of a particular flood event are increasingly likely to find their local roads, businesses, critical infrastructure, utilities, or emergency services affected. The report assesses risk to residential properties, roads, commercial properties, critical infrastructure, including airports, fire stations, hospitals, police stations, ports,
power stations, Superfund hazardous waste sites, water outfalls and wastewater treatment facilities, and social infrastructure, including government buildings, historic buildings, houses of worship, museums, and schools. Defining risk as the unique level of flooding for each infrastructure type relative to operational thresholds, the report finds risk to residential properties is expected to increase by 10% over the next 30 years, with 12.4 million properties at risk today and 13.6 million at risk of flooding in 2051. 2 million miles of road are at risk today, and that is expected to increase to 2.2 million miles of road over the next 30 years. Commercial properties are expected to see a 7% increase in risk of flooding from 2021 to 2051, with 918,540 at risk today and 984,051 at risk of flooding in 30 years. Currently, 35,776 critical infrastructure facilities are at risk today, increasing to 37,786 facilities by 2051, a 6% increase in risk. And compounding that risk, 71,717 pieces of social infrastructure facilities are at risk today, increasing to 77,843 by 2051, an increase of 9% over that time period. The report comes in the wake of several highly destructive flooding events that affected various parts of the U.S. this summer, including one in Tennessee in August, as well as the inundation of New York City's subway system in July and again in September during Hurricane Ida. Deadly and costly disasters that exposed how ill-prepared the U.S. is to reduce extreme weather-related infrastructure damage and the ensuing consequences. The new analysis also points to earlier catastrophes such as Hurricane Sandy, which hit the New York City metropolitan area in 2012 and flooded hospitals, crippled electrical substations, overwhelmed wastewater treatment centers, and shut down power and water to tens of millions of people. The U.S. infrastructure is not built to a standard that protects against the level of flood risk Americans face today, let alone how those risks will grow over the next 30 years as the climate changes, Matthew Ebby, founder and executive director of the First Street Foundation, said in a statement, adding, "This report highlights the cities and counties whose vital infrastructure are most at risk today and will help inform where investment dollars should flow in order to best mitigate against that risk." According to the report, there are significant differences at the county and city level in amount of risk that exists today and into the future. Most importantly, there are a group of counties and cities that have persistent patterns of vulnerability across multiple dimensions of physical risk from flooding. These areas tend to be in regions with well-established flood risk, such as coastal floodplains along the Gulf and southeastern coast of the U.S., but also in less well-known flood zones, such as in Appalachian mountain regions of West Virginia and Kentucky. To that point, 17 of the top 20 counties in the U.S., which are most at risk, that is about 85%, are in the states of Louisiana, Florida, West Virginia, and Kentucky. Additionally, The top cities at risk of flooding persistently show up in the states of Louisiana, Florida, Texas, and South Carolina. The analysis further uncovered a high degree of vulnerability in some of the major population centers in the U.S., including New Orleans, Miami, Tampa, Charleston, Chicago, and Los Angeles.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program Bridge. We are looking at the supplications of Al-Imam Ali ibn Husayn Zain al-Abidin salamullah alayhi, and we are still looking at the first verse, and we're looking at the first word, which is hirs. A human being, in his nature, is created to love and seek perfection. The only problem is that sometimes, as human beings, we seek perfection and we love things that, in fact, it leads to our destruction, not to our perfection. So we get attracted, and this gravity pulls us towards these things that takes us from the natural order of things to the extreme order of things. For example, we love to have wealth. Everyone does. We love to have money. That's sure. But sometimes if I think this is where my perfection lies, this is where I become who I am, then that's a dangerous place to be. Then that is what we call hirs. So a human being, as a human being, we can easily make the mistakes when it comes to knowing or trying to find out what brings us to perfection and to the things that we want and the things that we seek. So we think it's a shortcoming. I think there's something wrong with me if I don't seek these things. So Allah in the Quran, when He says, إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ خُلِقَ هَلُوعًا, it's like he was created with this sense of, you know, he has less patience. He just wants to get things done very quickly. And that's, he says, that's a problem. So one has to understand that the idea is you need to seek your perfection. And the things that are, in fact, lead you to your perfection, not to the things that you think will lead you to your perfection. So hirs itself will always drive a person to the brink of destruction if he puts his ideas and his mentality in the wrong place. Let's take a short break and then we continue, inshallah.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifat As-Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. So human beings, as we said, we must have our goals and our priorities set correctly. Because a person that thinks his aim and his goal in life is to seek money and wealth, obviously he's under the trap or in the trap of greed. But when a person puts his trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and connects to him, then his mental state changes. His happiness, his perfection comes in that regard. That's why we see Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, أَلَا بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ تَطْمَئِنُّ الْقُلُوبِ. Surely with the remembrance of Allah, the hearts are content. My heart is not going to be content from me having a big house, or me having a big car, or me having a beautiful spouse, or many children. These things are considered to be naqs, like a shortcoming, not a perfection. The only perfection a person could get is when it comes to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. From here, Al-Imam Al-Baqir salamullah alayhi in a hadith, he says, La hirsa kal-munafasati fi darajat. There is no greed like trying to compete with other people by seeking deeds, by seeking levels of heaven. Heaven itself is a trophy. Heaven is a reward, is how much you put, how much you get. So if I want to be greedy of trying to get as much or more of anything, in fact, should be heaven, shouldn't be this dunya, because this world, whatever is in it, it will finish, it will go, you will leave it behind. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave us classical examples from Qarun and upwards, right? Those people who had more money than anyone could even imagine. Qarun himself, only the key to his treasury required 40 people to carry, yet alone the treasury itself. But where's Qarun and where's his wealth? And all these rich people that we have in this world, once they die, are they going to take their bank accounts with them? Of course not. It will all remain here. The only thing a person can take with him to the afterlife is how much he worked for the afterlife itself. So the perfection lies in how much we connect to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Let us take a break and then we come back, inshallah.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. If a person is driven and motivated by this world itself, that will literally result into a greed. Imam Ali alayhi salam says in a hadith, إن الدنيا مشغلة عن غيرها. This world will distract you from things beside it. ولم يصب صاحبها منها شيئا. And whatever that person who lives in this world, whatever he gains from it, he says, إلا فتحت له حرصا عليها. In fact, it will open a gate of a greed towards it. So if a person moves towards wealth, the doors of wealth will open to him and he will become greedy in this regard. When he moves towards, for example, collecting and gathering material possessions, then a door will be opened. So each one of us, if we look into ourselves, we see that we have a greed in some field of life. Because there has to be something that I and you love so much that we are so attached to and want to have much of. And so this is where hirs comes from. Imam al-Baqir salamullah alayhi also says in a hadith, مَثَلُ الْحَرِيصُ عَلَى الدُّنْيَا. He says, the one who has greed over the dunya, over this world, كَمَثَلِ دُودَةِ الْقَزِ. He is like the silkworm. And with the silkworm, as you know, it wraps itself with silk until it kills itself. And he says, كُلَّمَا ازْدَرْتْ مِنَ الْقَزِ عَلَى نَفْسِهَا. The more that warm, that silk moth wraps itself with silk, the more it dies out of, the Imam says, it dies out of, the word he uses is gham, matat hatta tamutu ghamma, until it dies out of depression, because now it's wrapped, it can't get out of it. Same thing with me and you, God forbid, if we put ourselves in this state of mind where we will become greedy over this world, greedy over trying to have position, greedy of a materialistic life, we keep wrapping ourselves in it. It puts us in this state of depression, and then, God forbid, to lead to our demise, and then the afterlife, obviously, the result is known. Inshallah, we will continue this in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al Musavi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily around the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. The humanitarian group Doctors Without Borders has recently unveiled a new report estimating that the United States is hoarding nearly 500 million excess coronavirus vaccine doses, the most of any country, as poor nations across the globe remain without sufficient access to life-saving shots. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jake Johnson, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Reckless, Doctors Without Borders slams U.S. for hoarding 500 million vaccine doses. Stay tuned for more. The humanitarian group Doctors Without Borders unveiled a new report recently estimating that the United States of America is hoarding nearly 500 million excess coronavirus vaccine doses, the most of any country, as poor nations across the globe remain without sufficient access to life-saving shots. It's reckless and dangerous for the U.S. and other high-income countries to be sitting on excessive stocks of COVID-19 vaccines while others are desperate to provide their most vulnerable people with even their first dose. Dr. Carrie Teicher, Director of Programs at Doctors Without Borders USA, said in a statement, arguing that the Biden administration's hoarding of doses calls into question its claim to be a global leader on COVID-19. The longer people everywhere remain unprotected, the more lives will be lost, and the more likely it is that new and potentially deadlier variants will take hold, said Teicher. The U.S. must immediately make public and concrete commitments to redistribute excess COVID-19 vaccines globally if it truly wants to end this pandemic. To date, the Biden administration has pledged to donate roughly 1.1 billion surplus coronavirus vaccine doses to low-income countries, a commitment that public health campaigners have criticized as badly inadequate to meet global needs. According to the State Department, the U.S. has shipped around 177 million vaccine donations thus far. The World Health Organization has estimated that in order to vaccinate at least 70% of the global population by next year, 11 billion doses equitably distributed will be necessary. Doctors Without Borders, known internationally as Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF, said recently that even while factoring in third-dose boosters for high-risk groups, high-income countries are hoarding an estimated 870 million excess doses, including the nearly 500 million in the U.S. alone. The rapid redistribution of these doses to low- and middle-income countries could save nearly 1 million lives by mid-2022, the group said. In addition to immediately redistributing vaccine doses globally and demanding vaccine technology, the U.S. must remain committed and urge all countries to support the TRIPS waiver proposal at the World Trade Organization to waive intellectual property monopolies on all COVID-19 products during the pandemic. Public Citizen President Robert Weizmann noted in a statement that all African countries combined have had roughly 150 million doses administered. Africa has a population of over 1.34 billion. The U.S. population is 330 million, Weizmann said. But put it simply, Africa has four times the population of the U.S., but has administered about one-third the number of COVID vaccine doses. This unconscionable vaccine apartheid is not just leaving billions of people in African and other developing countries vulnerable to preventable disease, suffering, and death. It is dramatically increasing global poverty rates, as well as the death, disease, and hunger that accompany severe poverty. In its report recently, Doctors Without Borders warned that millions of doses could be tragically wasted if HICs, or high-income countries, do not immediately redistribute excess doses. G7 and EU countries alone could waste 241 million doses by the end of 2021, the group estimated, adding. Still, pharmaceutical companies continue to prioritize high-profit sales to HICs over a fairer distribution of vaccines. Teicher of Doctors Without Borders said recently that the COVID-19 vaccine inequity that pharma has created by putting profits before people's health is nothing short of shameful. In addition to developing a concrete dose redistribution timeline, by the end of October, the U.S. government must demand vaccine companies to share their technology and know-how. Teicher added, sharing these technologies will increase the global production and supply of COVID-19 vaccines, saving lives in this pandemic and in the future. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM. 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. Previously, we spoke about bringing joy to the believers, to fellow human beings, to orphans, and the results and the consequences and the rewards that a person will gain from them, or rather from this act of bringing joy and cheer to another person. But that is only one thing that a person can do. There are other things also that, you know, we have responsibilities towards our fellow human beings, towards our fellow believers, to our fellow Shia, and so on and so forth. And one of the other responsibilities and other, you know, acts that we should be able to do if we have the ability to do so is to remove stress, distress, anguish from the hearts of our fellow believers. And this also has a great reward and a great, you know, result that comes to us from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In a tradition narrated from Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, he is reported to have said that whoever alleviates a fellow believer's anguish, that whoever removes a stress, a problem, you know, something that this person is worried about, he removes it from, he has the ability to do so. Whoever that may be, whether it be doubt, whether it be debt, whether it be, for example, the inability of him to study properly, and he provides for him the facilities to do so, school fees, whatever anguish and stress and worry that this person has, and you see that you have the ability to help him, and you then alleviate it and you remove it from him, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will alleviate him of the anguish of the hereafter. What a great reward. That obviously the anguish and stresses and distresses of this world cannot be compared to that of the hereafter. But by you removing something so small that in comparison to that of the hereafter in this world, that of the hereafter, which is so, you know, grand that you cannot even imagine it, will be removed from you. That anguish and fear and distress will be removed from you. So whoever alleviates a fellow believer's anguish, Allah will alleviate him of the anguish of the hereafter, and will bring him out of his grave with a light heart. That is a heart that is clean, a heart that is not fear, a heart that is tranquil. And what is also amazing, that this being brought up with this type of heart, obviously we do not mean the physical heart here, this is the essence of our existence, the core of our existence, the life beat of our existence, that a person will then be able to show others, or others rather will see, that this was an individual who assisted fellow believers in their time of need, in their time of anguish, and this is the reward that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given him on the day of judgment. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to make us of those who have the ability, first of all, and then to use that ability to remove anguish and grief from our fellow believers, inshallah. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring you in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kavit Afley. Iran has said that its military drills send a message that Iran is ready to confront any threat against the Islamic Republic. Why would Iran conduct military drills on such a vast scale? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at the message that these drills send, especially to Iran.